And welcome into a special Thursday bonus edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Yesterday, I reached out to both of my guests today because I wanted to talk about the election. Now, just 5 days away, believe it or not, as part of Anything Goes Wednesday. Unfortunately, both of them had great respective reasons for not being able to do the show yesterday. No worries, though. I make the rules here, so I'm just adding a bonus show this week. We'll have a full sports discussion on tomorrow's Friday edition, as promised. But today, it's all about next Tuesday. My point here is not to tell you who to vote for, because most of all, you don't care what I think about who you should vote for. And I don't think you should care about who I think you should vote for. You should make your decision based on what's in your own heart and in your own interest. My point on this show is to flesh out some of the real issues in this election from a center position, because I think that there are some points that both sides make. I've said this my entire life, and I voted for Republicans and I voted for Democrats in my voting history. And I voted in every presidential election. I voted in every primary since I was old enough to vote. My first election was 1992. And I voted for both Democrats and Republicans for president and down ballot. So I am as centrist can be. That having been said, there's not a monopoly on good ideas and there's not a monopoly on bad ideas. I want to take a look at it from that perspective, as right down the center as I could possibly be. I want to talk about the real issues in this election, including today specifically, how we have all consumed this election. So joining me first is someone who I have had on multiple radio shows on multiple stations. He is the founder and CEO of Inquisitor.com. He's been a media startup entrepreneur. He's spent time on Wall Street. He has been on every cable news show there is. We welcome in Dominic Mizrandino to the Doug Russell Podcast. Dominic, as always, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Doug. Thank you.
With the election less than a week away, what are your overall thoughts about how this cycle has gone? Because this, to me, as someone who doesn't cover election news on a day in and day out basis, man, this one has just felt so much different, even than 2016.
Yeah, it feels different because I feel as if we have more information out there, but an even less active public, a less active in reading the facts and just simply reacting to those headlines, which is kind of heartbreaking because the information is out there. But yet I will notice you'll still have, for example, reader complaints on stories, and you're saying, guys, it's literally quoting the tweet, you know, or the information's out there, or read the law itself. So we have all that information out there, but we still as a public are not taking advantage of it as much as we should be. We're just reading the headlines sometimes and reacting to it emotionally.
Shortly after President Trump was inaugurated, the first, I guess, flap of his administration, and it was, let's be charitable, it was a stupid argument when the claim went out that his inauguration had more people than President Obama's. Whatever you want to call it, when the facts were presented to Kellyanne Conway the day after, she referred to it as alternative facts. Was that kind of a harbinger of things to come, in your opinion, for how this whole administration was going to go?
Yeah, I actually quote that very often, especially if I do lectures or such. I will discuss how I think the inauguration set the tone. You know, one of my issues, and I'm very big on the truth at times, even in business meetings, etc., I'm always the first one who sometimes tries opening up about the truth a little quicker than I should. But I think the truth is vital. And the problem is, I actually don't even mind interpretations of the truth. In the sense, if someone said, this particular inauguration, given the weather, it was an exceptionally passionate crowd, or the crowd was more engaged than any other one. And there's ways of interpreting it, but to boldface say there were more people, and then the Parks Department had to come out and say, no, here's a photo, it's not more people. We have those kind of debates, and that concerns me, because the facts are out there. And it's, now we're taking the fact saying, well, we didn't mean that fact, or that fact is alternative, but the fact is there, and suddenly getting avoided. You know, the challenge with that, I'm trying to stay as agnostic as possible and middle of the road, but yet, unfortunately, I think Donald Trump, President Trump, is very good at marketing. He's brilliant at it, and he knows the presentation of something at times is all that matters, regardless of what that reality is under the hood.
Maybe this is something that is better asked to one of maybe his political strategists or a political operative who does that for a living. But again, I want to stay as middle of the road as possible on this as well, and to look at President Trump's record and say it was all, if you're one-sided, if you're a passionate voter for Joe Biden, for example, you would say it was all a failure. Well, not necessarily. It wasn't all a failure. You look at some of the Middle East peace that has been put forth by this administration. You look at the unemployment numbers, they're down. You look at some of the true accomplishments that this administration had. It just seems as though that's not been what's highlighted either by the president himself or by the media because of all of these alternate facts that sometimes, you know, kind of squeeze the narrative. Has that been your experience as someone who
absolutely
runs a media outlet?
No, thank you. And absolutely. I think that is the guiding force. On one hand, I can understand it. You know, you could hear the breath of exasperation because it makes sense. You can if you control the media narrative, you're controlling the conversation. And President Trump is brilliant at controlling that narrative. At times, though, I think even his biggest fans would say he's at times his own worst enemy. Absolutely, he can take credit for certain things, the Middle East, elements of the economy. But I think the challenge is, I don't even know if he's wrong in it. In this sense, like I'm thinking the statement saying, I'm the best president for the African Americans since Abraham Lincoln. Well, that could be an interpretation. It's not. How does one quantify that or not, I guess? But it enraged one side, and it causes this emotional reaction. When I wonder, would he get the attention if he did do middle of the road and simply state the facts? You know, African-American unemployment is at this level as opposed to this level, and I feel that's improvement. But, you know, honestly, being in the media, I've been online 27 years. Your listeners could always look up my resume and connect with me at LinkedIn, miserandino.com as me, and you'll see my history. I've noticed that at times, Stephen Colbert is right about truthiness. Truth doesn't matter sometimes so much as what feels amazing. And, you know, you'll have sometimes an amazing headline and yet no content to it. But people want that headline. They just want to click and read and share without necessarily reading the content. And I think in a way that's what we're experiencing. We're not analyzing the content. We're not digging deep. We're probably not even spending more than 2 seconds. But in terms of media consumption, we are not taking that moment to interpret it, and we're simply reacting from it.
How did the term mainstream media become a pejorative? And do you chafe at that as much as I do?
I hate that as pejorative because, you know, there's a challenge. I think a journalist, if you're a journalist, your job is to seek the truth. And the problem is if that truth aligns to a particular political ideology, there's an assignment to that. And the challenge, I think, what President Trump is doing is almost inviting it in a way. You know, I thought it was kind of interesting during the most recent debate when he was saying, well, look at what Joe Biden's done. And then there's a dialogue. But who can judge that truth in terms of what is the more important story? Is it the Chinese bank account or is it the relationship of the Biden family in some way with China? And he is brilliant at saying, look over here. Whether or not that is a bigger or not event, I don't know if it's even relevant as much as that ability to get everybody like puppies chasing a squirrel. And so I do think it becomes a pejorative, but it also sends me that I think the media is so intertwined with the audience that now we're chasing butterflies running down the street as opposed to maybe doing the job as well as journalists could by focusing on what is the truth.
What was your take on the 60 Minutes interview with Leslie Stahl this past week?
It was interesting because there were certain stories I felt that were left out of the dialogue. Could he release the interview? You know, he was saying Joe Biden was never asked these questions. And I wondered, I was immediately researching what questions was Joe Biden asked. Is it a valid argument? So, you know, I think the job is to always say, is that a valid question? Is that a valid criticism? And let's investigate that. So for the Joe Biden, I was looking up, did Joe Biden have these intensive questions? Was it just Chase, the butterfly flying down the block, or was there a legitimacy to it? So, but at times, like we say, it's controlling the circus. So I couldn't even at times determine the validity because the story became simply he walked out. And I think maybe that point he had of does Joe Biden have it now becomes polarizing. The right believes Joe Biden did not get these questions. The left believe it was egregious he walked out. But there is some elements of truth in there, and we've yet to even spend the 5.5 seconds to interpret it. And I think also because of our media cycle, by the time you get through that 4.5 second mark, we're on to the next story already.
You brought up a word that I want to touch on here for a second, and that word is validity. The New York Post, as I think everybody at this point knows, we're pushing a story, and I don't know where it is on this particular date, but for a while, they were pushing the narrative that there was something untoward between Hunter Biden, Burisma, the Chinese government, and Joe Biden. No other mainstream, I'm going to use their terminology, no other quote-unquote mainstream media outlet, CBS, NBC, ABC, etc., would pick up this story. It was pushed mainly by first the New York Post and then their television brethren at Fox News. Did the other media outlets, CNN, CBS, ABC, NBC, etc., did they have an obligation to cover that story, in your opinion?
That, you know, I think that speaks volumes to our media cycle. I think the obligation is absolutely there. The problem is, I think we're covering from such a level without depth. We're covering in soundbite mode. You know, if you turn on CNN, you turn on Fox, MSNBC, you're kind of hoping to get that brief overview. And, you know, actually, I almost laugh sometimes. The best media I've seen is John Oliver, 1 hour on the subject. And at times, I think sometimes the subjects deserve that. But I feel like we've only had that in our media landscape maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago when you turned on, let's say, a 5 o'clock news and here was a summary when you had the 24 hours to process the news. Right now, we're not processing it. So when I came across the story, I said to my team, I said, absolutely, it's worth knowing. Every story to me, there's a degree one of should be investigating for good nor bad. Because now you have this cursory overview of this story. Was the laptop found by in Delaware and soaked in water? And why? And we're only talking the ridiculousness. And what saddens me is that just get to the end of the story. Find out what was the story in the laptop. What is on the laptop? Did the FBI verify? And I'm not tracking it to the minute on this particular story. But there is a truth out there, and I think we're just jumping on, oh my goodness, Hunter Biden did X, well, from one political extreme to the other political extreme being, you know, this was all a phony setup. But I'd almost wish the media in general, we had the time and the audience who said, no, take the 5 seconds to breathe, investigate the story, and get us reality, get us facts, get us reference points to determine what is reality.
You brought up John Oliver. He comes from the Daily Show family, first hosted by Jon Stewart, who I guess it was just announced earlier today that he's returning to television in some sort of news type of program. But that's what I would ask you about a show like Last Week Tonight on HBO Sunday nights, exactly, hosted by John Oliver. Is a show like that, where it uses humor. It uses profanity. It uses absurdness to tell a story. From a news person's perspective who runs a news outlet, is that good or bad for news, in your opinion?
Oh, I think it's beyond brilliant because, you know, I feel like, again, that the audience has changed. We are a very quick audience. I had that in mind recently if you think about the growth of TikTok. This is our world is now, give me a 30-second video, 20-second, now 10 seconds. We've moved from a YouTube medium of 10-minute videos to 30-second videos. You need that quick soundbite. So I think, in a way, what's happening, those things are becoming effective. Not because of the political ideology, but there's a maneuvering saying, I'm telling a story, and I'm going to tell it very entertaining, and you're going to follow this puppet around and watch the show as we describe the story. But it's almost, to me, it's a necessity to have these. It's a necessity to get the information out. I do believe strongly in the job of the media to educate the public on what reality is. But that's also, I think, a sad commentary in the state of in media's history. It's always been a challenge to work towards, to say, what is the truth? How does one get to the truth?
As I mentioned at the top, of course, the election, the end of the election. I mean, people have been voting. I've already voted, for example. My ballot has been in for almost a month now. But people have been voting early in record numbers. The end of the election, I guess you could say, is on Tuesday. How difficult has this election cycle been for you and your team, not only dealing with these particular candidates, but also with COVID?
Well, and there's two separate elements. COVID, I think, has created a universal stress from my team, for the public, for the corner store. It's a universal stress for all of us. We are all operating differently. You and I are in separate locations. If it wasn't COVID, maybe I'd say, cool, let me just jump on the next flight out to you, and we'll, do the show, and I'll fly home. Life is easy. And a lot of these things we are readapting. In terms of the election and early voting, though, entirely differently, I'm thrilled. I mean, I think the goal should be to get every single citizen voting. And if early voting allows for it, make it even earlier. It's okay. I think the goal of every American should be to encourage it. And I truly would be okay. I'd actually feel almost better if I voted for candidate A and the American population voted for candidate B and I was not in the majority. I'd still feel a sense of solace knowing the public was involved. A part of me would say, all right, there's a plurality here. But I think this is an interesting year that we kind of having this effect before the election day to such a degree. So this is also making it unique, and maybe that's one of the blessings of COVID, that we're starting to consider this.
How hard did the 2016 polls make it to try to predict who's going to win in 2020? Because Hillary Clinton, at the same stage of the election 4 years ago, was supposed to be elected president. Obviously, that didn't happen. President Trump lost the popular vote by about 3 million votes, but he still got the Electoral College to go his way. Nobody saw that coming. Did that make it difficult to predict what's going to happen next?
Well, absolutely. If you looked at every poll, it was saying this, and I think, that's the challenge of the Electoral College, not speaking to the right nor wrong of it. It focuses and hyper-focuses every election in the sense certain red states are red states and blue states are blue states. So our election gets hyper-focused to simply those middle states that really decide that election, whatever states they may be in that particular election. And I think there's a real difficulty in predicting where those states go, because on top of it, because the previous elections, I'm hoping this is going to be record turnout, but because the previous elections had such few number of voters, it's all swayed by who shows up, which is, to me, again, a sad commentary. Rather, all Americans show up, and then polls are going to be very accurate. But without all Americans showing up, it's simply which group has that passion or lack of passion to show up.
Final thing for you is we're joined by Dominic Mizrandino, CEO of Inquisitor. You have any predictions for what's going to happen between now and January 20th?
madness and insanity. Nah, you know, I think
it kind of seems like it, doesn't it?
It does, but I think, you know, America, I would never bet against America. I have exceptionally high faith in America. You know, I believe, like Warren Buffett perspective, that you invest in a stock at point X and you can pretty much guarantee it's going to be higher at 5, 10, 20 years if you're left on a deserted island, depending. And I think America is that. It's going to be better X number of years. But now to January 20th, I think, you know, we have enough going on. And you could even see the stock market. We have this moment with the stock market going down and 3%. Because people don't know, and you have a lot of unknown variables, not even internationally, our own domestically, as well as, of course, the elephant in the room of COVID. We have no easy predictors on that. And I think, you know, even the doctors are saying, we don't know for sure. We don't know when. We don't know the effect of the vaccine. We don't know the effect on society. So there are a lot of unknowns, which I'm hoping we'll get through. You know, once we get through, there'll be a calm throughout our you know, communities. But yeah, it's unnerving, and I think it's expected and understandable. You already have this unnerving feeling, and it's something, and you don't, even if you don't subscribe to a philosophy of being something, we all agree it exists. We all agree COVID exists, and we all agree we can't control the virus. The virus does its own thing, as well as this election, as well as it's no longer a small world anymore. It's a big world, and all these factors are moving together. So the only thing I predict is change.
And madness.
And madness.
And madness. Dominic Mizarandino, he's the CEO of Inquisitor.com. Check him out online. You gave out your socials earlier. You're on Twitter, at Dom Mizarandino, M-I-S-E-R-A-N-D-I-N-O. I will learn how to spell your first name better next time that I put it on the screen in front of you. I apologize for that. That was just a typo. Dominic, my friend, always so good to talk to you. Thank you so much for the insights.
All righty, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, Dominic. There he goes. Dominic Mizarandino. And yes, I unfortunately spelled his name wrong on our conference call. It was just a typo. But yeah, that's embarrassing. All right, moving along. We had WTMJ's Steve Scafidi on a couple of weeks ago to talk about the election last time, and this was what I think it was just over 2 weeks ago, and I got some great feedback from that conversation. And then I saw that he was quarantining for knee surgery this week, not knowing that the procedure was yesterday. So that's why I wasn't able to join me on the Anything Goes Wednesday edition of the podcast. But Steve Scafidi now joins me today here on the show. Steve, thanks so much for coming on. First of all, how's the knee doing?
It's good. I don't have a new knee, but I have a repaired knee. So it's not just your old friend, it's your newly repaired friend.
Very nice. So this week you've been off, and it's the ramp up to what everyone is calling, and I don't know if it's just hyperbolic or not. Maybe I'll ask you that question. Is this the most important election of our lifetimes? Because both sides are saying that.
Yeah, no, I've had this conversation on the show many times. Every election, every presidential election is the most important election of your lifetime because it influences the next 4, possibly 8 years of your life. So they're all important. So this one certainly is more, I think, more covered than any other election that we've ever seen in different ways. And we have a president who loves to tweet, which is kind of a new thing. But yeah, they're all important. This one certainly falls into that category of they're all important.
What has surprised you the most, either positively or negatively, in this election cycle when you go through what both candidates and both candidate sides have done throughout the course of the election?
A couple things stand out. One is that you can actually run a campaign without, at least at the early stage of the campaign, post nomination from your basement or from your state residence, and that's what Joe Biden did effectively for a few months. And now of course he's out and about, but doing it in a pretty safe manner. So I think most people would say that's the responsible way to do it. So that's one thing. The other thing is just the inability of the president to, and again, take polls for what, you know, what they're worth, because we saw what happened in 2016, at least on the state level. The inability of Trump, President Donald J. Trump, to ever catch Joe Biden in national polls or in most state polling. There's some difference if you look at that, those measures from 2020 to 2016. And the really curious thing for me will be next week, seeing how that plays out in the actual voting. Of course, now we know that the tabulation part will probably take more than a few days, so we may not know the results for maybe a week.
Do you believe the polls, knowing that the Marquette University Law poll came out yesterday, and it's been pretty steady all along, showing for the last couple of months that former Vice President Biden has about a 5-point lead over President Trump? Yesterday, the tally, and this will be their final poll before Tuesday, has Biden leading Trump 48-43.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little pessimistic. I have a lot of respect for Charles Franklin, but you know, I've said for a few months now that I think a couple things will be up for debate after this election. One is the power of the silent majority, as they like to call it, the Trump voters who don't respond to polls or pollsters. And two, the accuracy. I mean, Charles Franklin would admit that he got it wrong in 2016, and we are roughly, give or take a percentage, right around where we were 4 years ago in that polling for president. So I'm pessimistic. I think if they're wrong again, let's just say Donald Trump wins the presidency, if a lot of the state polls are still wrong, and the national margins don't turn out to be 9% or 10% or whatever they're showing right now for Biden, there's going to be a lot of people say, I'm done with polls, including me. I don't have a lot of pollsters on the show to begin with, but I would have a hard time, given how solid this lead has been for as long as they've measured it between Biden and the president, if it's wrong again, because why would I trust that?
Earlier in the podcast, I had Dominic Mizzarandino, who runs Inquisitor.com, a New York-based, but they do national news, entertainment news, politics. They dabble in a little bit of sports as well. And I asked him his perspective on how media has covered this election. From your perspective, somewhat still relatively new to being in the quote-unquote media, how do you judge how the media has handled this election?
I give it a mixed grade. Certainly they're on top of the stories. I've you know, you and I have talked about this before. I've been very disenchanted with the way that commentary has crept into the coverage, especially on news channels like CNN or MSNBC or Fox or whatever. I mean, Fox and MSNBC are kind of the opposites, but that has given us a platform where it's harder to trust what you're hearing, and it's not easy for the casual consumer of news programs or news networks to understand what's commentary and what's not. So it kind of all just gets blended together. That's something that I think we really have to pay attention to. Now, whether the genie's out of the bottle and we'll ever be able to get that back again, I don't know. But there's certainly enough people that I talk to, whether at work, on the show, or just in the general public, that are just disgusted with the way these things are covered now. I'm generally a fan of the media, less so of national media than local journalists, who I think still nail it almost every day they're on the job. But the national media, they're going to have some explaining to do, because I think in many ways they've led to this kind of diffusion of facts, where we have a harder and harder time as members of the public to try to figure out, okay, what's the truth here? And how do we get to some semblance of understanding, you know, really complex situations like healthcare and many other, the economy and many other things that we have to deal with every day.
What do you make of the story that has been pushed out first by the New York Post and then on the opinion shows on Fox, whether it's Sean Hannity, whether it is Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, et cetera, about the quote unquote Hunter Biden laptop? It seems as though it's been, at least on the surface, this loose based, untoward type of corruption between the Biden family and Burisma. And then there's this laptop that has some salacious dealings on it that the FBI has taken a look at. But you don't hear about it on CNN, CBS, ABC, NBC. You only hear about it on Fox. Have those other outlets done a disservice, or are they doing a service? Because it doesn't seem as though this story has been very well vetted, at least from the naked eye.
Yeah, I mean, it has been vetted by law enforcement. It has been vetted by, I think, these other networks. They're just not talking about it. And that is a question that you could certainly ask. Fox has certainly gone over the top on this thing. And Tucker Carlson, although now famously in the last couple of days, they've lost the documentation of one of the principal points of what he was talking about. So, and he blames it on the U.S. mail, which is kind of a stunning declaration. But, you know, I don't know what's there. And I do take the law enforcement community. I still have a lot of faith in those folks. And if they say there's nothing there that's, you know, crosses a line, then I take them on their word. But, you know, this is one of those stories that we don't know everything yet. And this could be a story that could be lingering. So let's just say Joe Biden wins the presidency in the next week or so. That story could be one that haunts him, even though they're talking about his son. any relationship that he has with his son, any communication, all that could be haunting him as he starts his presidency in January. So there's certainly something there. I would just say disappointment in how some of the other networks have covered this, or maybe they've done some research and said there's nothing here, but you still, given how widespread the commentary is on it, you still have to talk about it, and I don't see that happening.
I want to ask you about something that you just mentioned there for a second, Steve, and that was the documents that was sent, apparently, from New York to Los Angeles, what Tucker Carlson was talking about on his program on Fox. This big dump of documents that could take down the Biden presidency right before the election. How do you not make a cop? And this is where I'm getting with this is, does this pass the smell test? Because if you have these documents, how do you not make a copy of them before you send it through anywhere in the mail? How do you not make an electronic copy of it? How do you not make paper copies of it before you send it through the mail? That's, to me, and I'm speaking as one guy, this whole story does not pass the smell test to me.
Yeah, and I would echo that. I mean, come on. The technology is so easy now. Of course you don't send something without having made a physical copy or a digital copy or whatever is required. It does not pass the smell test. That's why, and I've seen these types of stories related to this Hunter Biden conspiracy theory or investigation before, and they don't pass that test. And for me, that's one of the biggest reasons why I don't know that there's enough there to say or do anything about. It just seems odd to me. Now, whether somebody like Tucker Carlson, who, let's be honest, has had some issues in the past with, you know, stories like this, if he's truly, truly a reasonable commentator / journalist, you make a copy and you don't now say 2 days later, well, it's lost. Because that, it doesn't smell like honest reporting to me.
Does it seem as though, and maybe I'm asking you to add two and two together and, you know, asking for an answer of 17, but is this to try to sow perhaps some doubt in mail-in balloting? Is that the end game here?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, that's a story. You know, I've said for a while, I think as much as you can talk about the delays of the Postal Service and the challenges of that agency, ultimately, ballots, in my opinion, are individual responsibility, where you order them early enough if you're doing a mail-in ballot, whether you go and pre-vote, whether you show up the day of, that's on you. And you can certainly rely on other people if you want to, and that, with exceptions. Obviously, some people are physically challenged or their age prevents them from being able to go in person. But beyond that, there's a 2-month window to make this happen. You have to take responsibility for your vote. So to answer the direct question about Tucker Carlson, yeah, it does seem like it's drummed up to kind of point the finger at an agency that would cast aspersions on the validity or the reliability of a mail service to get your ballot to the clerk's office. Yeah, sir. Nothing would surprise me at this stage of the
Changing gears. I don't want to debate the validity of Justice Amy Coney Barrett's credentials as now a seated Supreme Court justice, but I do want to talk about the process for just a second. Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor had made the statement that Republicans will pay a heavy price for the way that her nomination was handled, seated 36 days after the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Do you agree with Senator Schumer that Republicans will ultimately pay some sort of price for the process in which this was handled?
Yeah, you know, perhaps. But if you talk to a Republican or conservative, they're very happy that they now have a 6-3 majority on the U.S. Supreme Court. So, you know, that's something that reality is going to exist for a long time, given the age of some of the recent judges that the president has put on the court. I guess the political price is in Congress is that when you have Democrats or if and when you have Democrats controlling the Senate and or both houses of Congress and maybe perhaps the presidency as well, you will see an effort by Democrats to push back and say, look, we didn't like what you did. How do you like this? That is the nature of politics now. And I said this the other day on the show. Are you happy with this reality? Because this is now what we've sown with all the political infighting and the lack of bipartisanship and all the I've got to hate the other guy because they have a D or R behind their name. This is the byproduct of that. This is the reality now. So when somebody has controlling interest in the Senate, the House, or the presidency, and they have the ability to change laws, to change policy, they will do it willy-nilly. So we could see a rapid fire over the next few decades back and forth on health care or Social Security or pick a subject, because that's going to be the nature of how politics have shaped our leadership now. I'm not a fan of it. I've been calling it out for at least 3.5 years that I've been on the radio, but this is what you get. So to the public, either you have a choice. You either accept it, or you put people in place in those positions in Congress or in the presidency who say this is nonsense. Policy is more important than the party. And when that happens, and if that happens, maybe we'll get back to some sort of normalcy. Right now, it's just political hijinks. And there's a lot of people vested in it. Consultants, certainly the machinery of politics, the fact that what are they going to spend on this election, billions of dollars? Is that a good use of the money? I don't think so.
All right. So I want to end here. To your point about where politics is right now, is the system broken in this sense? Republicans seem to be run by either the far right or the Trump right, if you will. Democrats, the majority of them, at least the ones that are in power, perhaps Vice President Biden notwithstanding, it seems to be moving to a hard left tilt as well. Is there a way that we can move both parties back to the center and have a little bit more sanity? Or is the system, in your opinion, broken?
It is broken, in my opinion. And I kind of laid out a little bit of that in my previous answer. But I think once you see the byproduct of what we've sown here, where the other guy's the enemy, or the woman's the enemy, and everything they say is bad, everything I say is genius, you probably have to experience what that's going to feel like for a while. And if you're a fan of constantly changing rules, constantly changing policies, well, then maybe you'll like it. But I would guess that the American people would like to know, this is what I'm going to pay in taxes every year. They would like to know, this is what my health care obligations are, whether it's some form of government assistance or changes to Medicare or Medicaid or whatever it is. They'd like to know, they'd like to have some certainty. And once you've dealt with uncertainty for a while, then at that point, maybe the public says, you know what, this is crazy. We need people that are just going to focus on the work and not less on the hysterics and the nonsense of politics. That could be decades in the making. And there's a danger here, a real danger, in my opinion, because you can also blow up a country that way. You could actually have a lot of civil unrest beyond what we already have based on politics, based on the fact that we've fed into this, you know, machinery for a few decades now, you know, led by radio talkers and TV talkers and all those guys and women that do that. And now we have to live with that. And at some point, maybe there's a, you know, we say that life and the stories have cycles, right? Maybe that cycle will have to go to the worst before it gets to the better. I hope so. Otherwise, we're talking about a much bigger problem.
He is Steve Scafidi. Listen to him back on the air after his minor knee procedure earlier this week. He'll be back on Monday from 8:30 until noon on 620 WTMJ. Longtime friend and a great teammate when we were working together over on Capitol Drive as well. Steve, appreciate the time. As always, feel better. And whatever's going to happen next week, you've got a hell of a week coming up to talk to your listeners about.
I'm looking forward to getting back and talking about it. It's always great to talk to you, Doug.
You as well. Thanks, Steve. Steve Scafidi joining me here on the Doug Russell Podcast. That's it for this special edition of the show. As always, we would love to connect with you at Doug Russell Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Search for the Doug Russell Show on Facebook. Email us at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Quick radio plug, I'll be on the Bill Michaels Huddle tonight on 1250 WSSP and around the state on a local station near you. Check your local listings from 6 until 8 this evening. The great Mike Clemens will also join us as well. Packers with a big game against the Vikings at Lambeau Field on Sunday. Tomorrow, here on the pod, the week that was for the Wisconsin football team, and what a week it was. Also, a Marquette basketball outlook, believe it or not, as they deal with their own COVID situation. And, of course, a Packers preview for their game against the Vikings on Sunday as well. Have a great Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow.